Friday. The way that nature intended it. Don't pass it.
Here we go. Hello, everybody. It's Andy Lopez. You're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. The music in the background is called Wind Rider. Okay, that's enough. This one happens to be, 13 minutes long. It's a short one. Lately, I can't seem to write anything less than 20 minutes. And so this one's actually 28 minutes long, but I cut it down to 13 minutes because, well, it's a long story. I want to explain it someday about it. So today, there's lots of things going on. There's always stuff going on. I want everybody to know that I still have my monthly contest. It's going on. Happens every month. And this time, everybody wins. Everybody who enters will win a free lifetime membership to my club. It's only $20 a lifetime. But this will allow you to get, I think I have 21 or 22 books. The latest one is called Don't Panic, It's Organic. You can get the ebook version of it now. Not quite done yet. It's being at the artist. The artist is doing the final artwork. Then I have a little bit more to do in the index. And then it's done, and it'll be a print version of it, as well as the ebook version. Now, the ebook version of it will be in color, so that's going to be interesting because you'll love the artwork. And the print version, well, I'm going to have a special edition. I'm going to maybe do 100 of them, which will have to cost more because the color version cost me close to $40 to do, just to print the cost. So I might sell it for $100, print version. You're gonna see, when you see it, you see what I mean, because Cindy's doing, I think it's 24 different pieces of artwork at the beginning of each chapter, full page, and so that's gonna be really cool. But you can get it, so if you want to join, it's a lifetime membership. I answer all your questions. I do not only this show, I do 5 other shows. I also do an audiobook show, and of course, I have the 20 books and the website for members, lots of stuff. All you got to do is go to invisiblegardener.com, subscribe to the newsletter. There's a little box that will say, if you're interested in a contest, click on it, send it back to me. As soon as I get it, you'll get something back saying you won. I'll give you a link, follow the link, follow instructions, and you're in. See? Cool, right? Okay, so and today I have a guest. Believe it or not, I have guests every once in a while. I'm trying not to have a guest every week because I don't get to do anything then. But I have a lot of fun. And this particular guest, hey, Ryan, how do you say your last name? Wait, Slabor?
Slabor, actually.
Slabor. That's a cool. Is that a Viking name?
I wish. No, it's a Middle European, somewhere between German and Czechoslovakian and the old Yugoslavian states and all that. I'm a European mutt is where that name came from, and
so
changed several times over.
Ryan is with Acres USA, and Acres USA and I go back before the beginning of time. I think I started in the, you all know my story. I'm from Florida. And Florida, I did my Invisible Gardener for a long time, started in 1970. But I think somewhere around 1970-ish, early 70-ish, maybe late middle 70-ish. I don't exactly remember when I first connected with Acres USA because I was already into organic gardening and I was looking for the best stuff. And, you know, in those days there wasn't an internet, so you had to be able to read something or a magazine or something. So I think I was keyed into Rodale's, and Rodale had something in there. And so I contacted, hey, Ryan, do you know about Nitron A35?
I'm familiar.
You haven't been around long enough. You never met the folks who started it and ran it.
No, I am the opposite of you. I'm pretty brand new to this whole thing. I've been working with Acres for about 2 years now.
Okay, well, so I ran into Frank and Gay Finger, that's their name. I read about the Nitron product because at that time I was already on the path of working with the soil. I wrote Heal Well, they Acres USA published my first book, Heal the Earth in Your Spare, How to Heal the Earth in Your Spare Time. Did you know that, Ryan?
I did know that one, actually. I did my a little bit of homework before this.
did you get to read it? Do you guys have like a copy on the shelf somewhere?
We probably do. I was actually digging through our folders and found an old version of it sitting on our servers, actually. So I was reading a copy of it.
Cool. If it's signed, it's worth a lot of money.
Well, that was what I was digging for, exactly.
Did you notice a date on that? Because I was trying to figure out when I started talking with Chuck, when I first met Chuck. I think I met him at a Nitron conference, because the Nitron company, they gave an organic conference, and I used to fly in. In those days, I flew everywhere, so I would go over there, and it would be, I think it was a 4-day or 5-day thing. And, of course, Chuck was there, as I would say, Chuck Waters. I'll call him Chucky. He didn't like it the first 10 years, and after that, he gave up. Sorry. I couldn't help it. But he published my book. It was great. And then from then on, it was just kept on going. So Acres USA is, you know, I talked about Acres USA many times on this show, because I tell people, look, if you're not reading Acres USA and you're into organic gardening, you're missing. It's like you go into the library, you're only really sitting in the guest room. You know, there's a little room outside the library. You just sit there. There's no books. So you're missing out on a lot. And Acres USA at that time, again, I think it was 72, 73, 74, somewhere around in there, you know, they were already doing this then, you know, and in those days, organic farming, organic gardening was still trying to get a foothold, fighting the usual, you know, you can't grow things organically stuff, you know, and now reading it, to me, it's always amazing because I have to apologize. I did that already to Ralph in the sense that I forgot to keep renewing my stuff, and you move along, you do your thing, and you go, you know, I'm missing something, and then I remember Acres USA. and as soon as I get it, I have to figure out, you know, I have all the books, magazines now, you know, that so much information that you just can't put it away. I have to maybe I might give it to the local library or find a gardening club that can use it as part of reference, because it's so much information there. Even now, I mean, the subjects are really, really cool in terms of healing the earth, in terms of, and actually being a farmer, you know, actually being somebody that can produce a viable product. And then I love your, in the beginning you talk about what's going on and stuff, you know, in terms of the politics, in terms of how to get things done in Congress, and, you know, organic certification, all this stuff is really, really absolutely, for me, I'm glad to be reading again. And, you know, I just turned 69. I just told myself, you're never too old to be learning things. You know, I actually, guys, I could write an article. You said I would, but I just do too many columns now, try too much already to start another one. I have to get a secretary or something. But so Acres USA, tell us a little bit about Acres USA and what's going on with agriculture and ranching, because that's what you guys do, right?
That's what we do. You did a heck of a job. In fact, I was taking notes as you were talking about us. You did a nice job of describing what we do and how we do it. We're a publishing and education house. For those who have never heard of Acres USA, we do a monthly magazine, we do books, we do events. We're always searching for new ways to help educate farmers who are really interested in either maintaining or transitioning to organic or eco-agriculture techniques and methods for your farm, which really means avoiding at all costs, you know, toxic pesticides and herbicides as much as possible.
Did you guys come up with a name, eco-agriculture?
That was Charles Walters way back in the 70s.
We do take pride in that.
It's been used several times over since then, but we do make the claim that Charles was the one who created that term before we really had a term for organic, quite honestly.
Yeah, right. Exactly right, because I'm looking at it and I'm going, I remember this from somewhere. Because, you know, not too many other people actually use it. I think you guys are the ones that are using it. And it's, you know, for me, when I did organic gardening and stuff like that, you know, I never really had the word eco attached to it, anything at all, not until long doing it, because for me, ecology, economy, it's, you know, I never used it, but eco-agriculture is really makes it very simple for people to understand, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a little less political and daunting than organic. You know, the organic has a lot of skepticism, and even it's really controlled by a group of non-farmers. You know, that term within the USDA, they're policymakers who get to decide what organic is. So we certainly support organic, and we always want to encourage people to go that route, especially if they're heavy into pesticide and herbicide use. But we always are wary of attaching ourselves to that term, because at some point it's not in the control of farmers, and that's who our audience is, and they could always change that definition to allow more toxic chemicals in there.
You know that I created the term "Don't panic, it's organic." I own the copyright to that.
That's smart.
You know, and the thing about that is that you're absolutely right, because I get stuff all the time. For example, people say, you know, organic gardening is not safe. There are chemicals there that will kill you just as fast as, you know, chemical gardening would,
right,
you know.
Right.
And, you know, and so they, and you know, when I say don't panic, it's organic, they really, you know, that's the one thing that they key into is like, no, organic, malathion is an organic compound. And if you look at it from another point of view, organic could be any organic compound chemical, you know, malathion, you know. And so, and then it's even more confusing when you look at, for example, an organic gardening, for example. And I talk a lot about using rock dust, and I talk a lot about, you know, certified organic, being certified organic, right?
Right.
And so now, you throw in the word natural into it, and now you're going to go, oh, now it's going to be even more confusing, because, you know, to me, it should have been natural gardening right from the beginning. Instead of organic gardening, it should have been natural gardening, right?
Well, no, you're exactly right. And that's where, unfortunately, Charles did have to come up with a term other than agriculture to call what we preach and practice. And that was kind of the state of agriculture, and still is the state of agriculture today, where we need a separate term. But that's something that I'm sure you heard him talk about over and over again in the 70s, that burden of proof. You know, when can we get where the burden of proof is not on the natural growers who are using ecology practices and monitoring nature the way it's nature intended? Why is the burden of proof in those who are using synthetic solutions? And, you know, he would call them chemical amateurs. You know, why are the ones who are using shortcuts given the benefit of the doubt?
Right. It's really they're trying to make people have to prove that organic works. And on top of that, what they do the majority of the time is a constant fight between, you know, the so-called organic and the conventional. And you get into that fight and you never really get too much progress done in terms of actually teaching people. What happens is they're more confused than ever before. They walk away going, I don't know. And you know, lots of studies say, the recent study said there's no difference between conventionally grown produce and organically grown produce. And, you know, that's a battle that they want you to get into, when in reality there is major difference. But as long as you're fighting, you're never going to, you know?
Right. No, you're exactly right. And we always remind people, too, that this is, you know, and this is where it's hard to make the leap on the consumer level, because they do see organic as that tomato in the grocery store. And we really want to help people understand that we're talking about the soil that tomato is grown in. And that may not seem like a big leap to your audience, but that's a pretty big leap when I hear people talking about it, when I get people's questions or skepticism back going, you know, why does it have to be more expensive? And is it really that much healthier? And why? What's the big deal? If it tastes the same, why should I do that? And it's not about that tomato exactly. It certainly has something to do with it, but it is about the next generation. It is about our kids and grandchildren. It is about doing the right thing, quite honestly.
So you have to learn how to. It's an education. To me, it's always been an educational thing. That's what I've always done. You know what? I don't put people down if they have their beliefs, you know, and their beliefs can get them into trouble. But the forces that be now, that's what you do. You confuse your enemy, so to speak. Yeah. And it's too bad if we're in a battle. We're never going to really learn. Did you see this show? There's a movie that you probably saw, Symphony of the Soil.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. I believe it or not, I just saw it the other day on my Amazon thing. I'm going, what the heck? Because people called me up and said, Andy, that's you. Are you in that show? Because that's exactly what I've been saying all along. right, from forever. It's about saying, look, it's the soil, stupid.
Yep. Yeah, that's, you know? That's it. Yeah, that's it. We, yeah, and I think, you know, and it's amazing how it changes the conversation at that point about, you know, when you were talking about organic or we're just talking about farming, that when we get down to the earth that the you know, the plants are grown in and the livestock are feeding from, it does tend to change people's conversation. I'm going to say it changes their behavior necessarily, but and to your point, yes, I always want to make sure it's clear that we never go stick our finger in traditional farmers' chests and say you're doing it wrong. We really do want to support it. We know all farmers' jobs are hard. We know the pressures they're under. We know that it is not a easy profession at all. But for those who I go on a farm tour quite often, and a lot of those farmers on farm tours who are going along just to catch other ideas will be traditional farmers or conventional farmers, just kind of peeking over the fence, looking at an organic farm, going,
"Well, they're good people, you know. All they want to do is grow the best food and do the best way they can. It's not their fault that they've been told you have to rototill, you got to do this, you got to spray this, buy the Roundup, or you'll be fine." You know, it's not easy, and I deal with arborists that way,
right?
You know. And people, you know, I consider myself a natural arborist, but some people say, "You're not a real arborist because you're not certified." I said, "Well, I'm not certified because I don't use any of the chemicals you're taught how to use." Mm-hmm. When you're a certified arborist, you're 78% of it is of the test is how to properly, safely use chemicals. How fast should the wind be blowing before you use this pesticide? I go, "Well, I don't use that pesticide, so I let it blow," right?
Right.
And then I give them the answer of what the reason is. They say, "Which of these pesticides would you use for this problem?" I would say, "None." None of it. It's the soil, stupid. It's the soil. And they don't get it. I mean, I work a lot with arborists who are at least open to it, because they can't argue with the fact that the tree is connected to the soil. Right?
Right. Right. Right, and they actually have a symbiotic relationship between the two.
Right. So I teach them about, you would think that an arborist, the first thing that they study is the soil. You know, what is it, what's in the soil that makes everything work? What's happening? And to me, you know, all these diseases and all these pests are controllable through the soil. And they don't argue with you anymore on those conditions. They say fertilize, right? And one arborist called me up and said, "I love it that you tell people not to use fertilizers on your trees." Which is exactly what I do. When I treat people's places, I don't use any fertilizers. My concentration is the soil. And one of the things I like about Acres USA is that they're talking about the soil. So any homeowner can look at this and go, "Well, maybe that'll work on my property," because the property is basically a small farm if you look at it in certain ways. It just doesn't have all the animals and all the things that makes a farm, but it's kind of like a modern farm, right? Without the,
Yeah, no, certainly. I think there's a lot of people who don't have the ability, and certainly I think the number one, there's a lot of dreamers and a lot of farmers who want to, who don't have the access to land, don't have the access to capital, but they want to do something in their backyard, in their kitchen shelves, you know, something that they can grow. And we have, you know, and they attend our conferences and they do subscribe to our magazine. And I love talking to those folks because they're some of the most creative people we run into because they've had to figure it out in a very small space.
And the information is right there for them. You can go back for years. Do you have it on electronic? Yes, we can go back. I know I could do that with Playboy, and I know I could do that with Scientific American. You know, go back all the years that they've been publishing National Geographic. You guys do that yet?
You know, we don't. We're really about beginning of last year. We really decided to really focus on digital and to make sure we were pushing digital. So we are in the process of developing a website. We're going to have about 5 years worth of magazines.
So do you mean to say all these hundreds of years of magazines you guys have been doing, where is that? You have like a library where you stack
them? They're sitting in boxes in our archive room in our office, believe it or not. So our editor, Tara Maxwell, who's fabulous and fantastic, been with us 7 or 8 years, she probably emails me at least once a week going, "Hey, Ryan, when can we have an online archive?" So you're not alone there, and it's something.
Yeah, because, you know, I would love to be able to access that information whenever I need to access stuff, right? It's like a major library work. You have to get it. I tried to save it myself. It's impossible. I end up with, like, gee whiz, I feel like those people, you know, the hoard things.
Sure.
Every issue, and even now, I want to hang on to it. But at the same time, part of me says, well, you should give it out to people.
Sure.
When they finish reading it, pass it on. What I do now is I give it to my guys that work for me. Not so much my customers that I don't have time, but the gardeners. I say, here, look at this. And see, they tell me, one lady says, well, I want to do what you're doing. What do I do? I said, well, you got to get Anchors USA. You got to start reading it. And in the back, they have these resources. They got places you can buy. You know, I make a product called Super Seaweeds, a microbiological activator, started in the sixth grade. I can look in the back of Anchors USA and come up with about 10 different companies that's exactly what they do. And their product they have millions of dollars backing them up to make really good, wonderful biological products that I wouldn't, that's one reason why I happened to, somebody said, have you ever read this? I go, oh, yeah. And as soon as I got that copy sheet, look in the back, there's about 20 companies I didn't even know were around at all. And I'm already looking at getting some of their products because why make it myself if I can get this behind, I get a product from a good company that has all the biological. I mean, it's not easy putting this stuff together and making it happen, you know?
No, I was talking to a company the other day. They compress seawater and pull the nutrients out of seawater through this reverse osmosis process and have amazing amount of technology going into this way to use the nutrients from seawater.
Is that C90? Then,
yeah, it's one of the companies, yeah, that does that kind of stuff. And they... but I love talking to them because I kind of had to ask them, I was like, how much nerve does it take to knock on a farmer's door and say, hey, I've got this compressed bottle of seawater nutrients that I think you should apply to your fields. And they looked at me like, you know what? We don't care because we know it works. And so I thought.
That's the whole thing, right? Exactly right. Yeah. That's the whole thing. I find it interesting because all you got to do is say, here, try this.
Yeah, right.
But the thing is they also have to understand that you can't really do both really well. You can't be using your fertilizer, chemical fertilizers, you know, the high nitrogen stuff. You can't be using any of these pesticides. And I expected to be using these products. Again, it would only work to the extent of the health of your soil. So they have to understand that the product is there to help, to bring the soil, to help the soil, right?
Right. Right. And we have a lot of people, you know, the number one objection that I hear when I talk to farmers is cost. You know, I can't afford to go to organic.
Yeah.
I can't afford to do this. And that's where, you know, these, to your point, the consultants who work with us and speak at our conferences and are, you know, don't even work with us, but are in the eco-agriculture world, they are so good at sitting down with farmers and mapping out a plan to get there and actually showing a return on that investment within, you know, it is probably within a 5 to 10 years. So it's not something that you're going to turn around and pay for it within, that next month. But
5 years is being kind, but yeah, 5 to 10 years. You know, that's what it takes to get the soil back in shape. And the whole thing is really sustainable. That means that every year it gets better and better, and every year you're going to be spending less and less to get more and more. And so when they say we can't afford it, it's more like you can't afford not to, because every time you keep destroying the soil, you're going to have to give that land up and move on to something else, because you will not be able to grow all there, and it's going to have to take time for it to bring the soil back. So the sooner you guys start making, you know, learn how to make proper compost and learn how the soil, the cheaper it's going to get for you. And yeah, you can, you know, I mean, I've always argued about the cost of organics. Why does organic carrot cost so much more? And, you know, I understand the economics of it, but reality, right, this should be costing less and less and less, because it costs you less and less, and the product would be better and better. Then you know, but that's just a, you know, a unfortunate aspect of it, is that, you know, you're taking a, I think eventually the cost of all these things should come down to a reasonable level, you know, but it's really what you're paying for is these people experience and their knowledge and their ability to come up with this.
Right. Right. That's you're not paying for a long-term solution at that point. And that's really what we're trying to develop, is those long-term solutions that can, there's a potato farmer, and I can't remember his name or his farm, and I apologize for that, but he's out in Western Colorado, who by accident ended up kind of moving to the sustainable route. He was a potato farmer struggling with his yields out there. He irrigates 100%.
Wait, was that in your last magazine?
I don't think that's so, but anyway, he. Long story short, he accidentally spilled pea seed into his potato seed and combined them in the seeder and said, well, I'm not going to spend the money to rebuy it, so I'm just going to plant and see what happens. And he planted the peas and the potato seeds together, even planted the pea seed as deep as the potato seed, and sure enough, sprouts came up, and all of his neighbors were telling him he was going to have a terrible crop because they were all competing with each other, and guess what happened? You can probably guess what happened. He had the best yield he's had in 10 years. And
that's the opposite. The pea happens to be one of the best legumes you can get.
Yeah, exactly. And so he kind of, and all of a sudden, he was the laughing stock of the community until about 2 years later when everybody was planting peas with their potatoes at that point.
Yeah. So it was, yeah, exactly right. So listen, questions I'm supposed to ask you, like, okay, she was at this conference in Columbus, Ohio. Tell me about the conference. Dr. Vandana Shiva was there. I think this person also was talking in the Symphony of the Soil, right?
Yes, she is very well known. Is getting well known. I don't know if she's well known that well in the U.S. at this point, but that's one of the reasons we were so excited to have her. She is very. She speaks all around the world. She's from India. She really talks about the fairness and honesty that goes into agriculture and how it applies to the world, especially vulnerable populations who are more prone to be. Tested on or been used toxic agriculture techniques with. She's an amazing speaker and really inspired our audience, and she inspired us. I mean, I had one of my staff came up to me who's our accountant, probably never farmed in his life. He walks up to me and he goes, Ryan, I quit. I'm going to start a farm. And so he was kidding, but I don't know if he's kidding that much after she talked. So,
can you get a hold of her for me? I'd love to get her on the show.
I would love, she is, we were lucky, and in all honesty, we wouldn't have had her there had we not had support from the Organics Consumer Association and Ronnie Cummings, and Regeneration International, and Andre Liu. Both of those organizations are fantastic at spreading the word to eco-agriculture, and we were lucky that they just called us and said, hey, we got an idea. We want to bring Vandana to the conference this year, and we said, we will make that happen if you guys can help us. So I owe them a big thanks for helping us do that.
So what happened at this? When was the conference?
It's in December. We have a conference every year. It's in December, early December. This year it was in Columbus, Ohio. Next year it's in Louisville, Kentucky. We do 2 days of really intensive seminars and classes called the EcoAg University, and then we follow that with 2 days of a trade show and some hour-long classes. And we have our bookstore open, and we have all sorts of fun events and mixers and things like that to go with it. So we really just try to connect old, young.
You've been doing this since, for 50 years now or something?
This was our 45th.
45th year. 46, right.
This was our 42nd, excuse me.
42nd year, right. You know you're doing something right, at least, and you also know that it's needed, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this if nobody needed it.
It's pretty phenomenal to see the amount of young people who showed up this year at our conference. That was, honestly, one of the challenges I thought I was going to have with Acres is, we were going to have just like the ag industry, it's aging and it's hard to find this next generation to come in and be the leaders in agriculture right now. And I the second year at our conference that I attended, I was there this year, and I just, that worry went away. There are so many young people who were there just seeking information and opportunities and networking to try to figure out a way to get into this world and make a positive change, in agriculture.
Yeah, right. I know I work myself with a bunch of kids, one of the most intelligent people on the planet,
they see things differently, and they do have an ethic of they're a little more, they're born skeptical, this generation. And I really appreciate
they're more
that.
Responsible. They know automatically what responsibility means.
Yep.
It's a farm bill year. What does that mean?
The U.S. is going to be debating, the policies around the farm bill, in D.C. this year, so we're going to keep our eye on that. It generally is a lot of fluff and posturing without a whole lot of change, and I would expect that's going to be the same this year. They'll probably
you think
be
so. The government, our beloved, in the White House won't have anything to do with this.
I don't know if he knows anything about farming. Quite honestly, I'm guessing that
is that they're passing all kinds of, they're getting rid of all types of environmental laws that they've had in place. You know, they're doing all kinds of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they want to say that, you know, they make organics or even eco agriculture illegal, right?
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, certainly we have no, the sustainable movement is losing friends in the government right now between, you know, the EPA and those who tend to watchdog. We know Scott Pruitt, the guy running that organization, you know, has sued the organization several times and has been outspoken in defense of heavy polluters in the country. So, but, you know, I always have a deep belief in people that just because you can, and just because, you know, if the government says we're going to drop all regulations and you can use whatever and spray whatever, it doesn't mean you can or should, you know, and that's still.
Don't be surprised if they're going to say, well, you don't really need labeling anymore. You don't need to be told on the label because these are all safe, just like they were trying to do with genetically modified, what they're doing with GMO stuff. They're saying it's totally safe, so it doesn't have to be on the label.
If they want to do anything to help U.S. agriculture and specifically U.S. farmers, that would be one thing that they could certainly do, is restore some of the labeling and geography coding and things like that have been on food off and on for years but never really had a true advocate back there to show what local food really is and to give that value of local food. But so, yeah, I think labeling is seems
that's
like
a big issue. It's always been
a huge issue. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always been a big issue with me. I tell people, just buy certified organic. Don't even buy the natural stuff anymore, because there's so much stuff in the natural that's not really natural. I mean, you know, GMO is in there, the genetic modified sugar, you know, it's in there. They have a new form of sugar. They were going to label it, if I eat this, I'm going to die sugar, but they decided to call it something safer, you know?
Right. That's yeah, it's been nice to see some correction in the soda pop industry a little bit in the past few years. That there's some, but anyway, there's a long way to go there. Even the juice industry we know is using a lot of that stuff and kind of ruining the whole point of drinking juice in the first place.
Well, you know, I pretty much the only juice I would drink anything I could run through my little juicer myself.
That gets expensive in a hurry, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, buying stuff in the store nowadays, you know, you have to really read the labels really, really, really carefully, and you find that, gee, why does it have so much sugar in it? And, you know, I always thought, well, some of the juices are natural sources of sugar, but they don't, you know, they don't always have to tell you to add additional sugar to it. And so it makes it, and me, when I find that I'm drinking something a lot, then it's probably the sugar is making me, you know, because I'm a sugar addict. If I find something, I'll start eating and eating and eat the whole thing. I'm going, oh, I ate the whole thing. Right?
I can relate to that a little bit.
So listen, one of the questions is about the widespread legalization of marijuana here in California and Colorado. Yeah. You know, also to hemp, because I think hemp is included in this legalization, even though it's really not. It should never have been included together. Hemp and marijuana are two entirely different plants entirely. And then medicine. So what do you think?
Well, I wanted to ask you the same thing, but yeah, I'm, you know, we're sitting in Colorado is where our business is located, up in Greeley, Colorado. And we have seen, obviously, in the past 5 years or what it's been since legalization, a huge boom. I finally got a lot of questions from farmers this year in Ohio at our conference, again, not to be a broken record, but coming up to me and asking me about, you know, how do we get in, how do we learn about this, and what's the risk? And I think a lot of farmers are seeing it as a way to diversify their crops. They can.
Are they talking about hemp or marijuana?
Well, marijuana right now, but hemp is hugely popular here. We're seeing there's a whole county in southwest Colorado called La Plata County that's pretty much converted all from rice and cotton over to hemp. Using co-ops and collectives and working together, the farmers have done that, and it's
You know that folks that you know, if it's legal, you know it's legal. You can grow your own in your backyard, right?
Yep.
Now you know that folks who grow their own in their backyard and they're anywhere near hemp growers are going to be in for a big problem. You know that, right?
Yep.
They can't be grown anywhere near each other. Here in Ventura, Patagonia. Patagonia, that's the closing place. Patagonia, right? So they spent $40 million a year importing hemp. So they told the farmers of Ventura, just grow it for us and we'll pay you the $40 million, right?
Yeah.
So there's a couple of customers. One person has 1,500 acres, right?
Wow.
So he wants to not only grow, because now we're illegal, so he wants to grow both, right? And so I said, you can't do it. You can't do it. As a matter of fact, if he does 1,500 acres of hemp, nobody in Ventura, nobody in, I'm betting Southern California can get away with growing outdoors. Because that stuff will spread. They will pollinate each other, and your marijuana won't be any good for your smoke.
Right, right. We haven't run into, I think a lot of our customers and readers are still kind of wondering how to, you know, they're waiting. They're waiting and seeing a little bit on that industry. But I wanted, and we haven't seen it really snowball too much here, mainly because of the lack of fiber production outfits. You know, that it's really, the seed is popular for foods and granolas and things like that.
They have to ship it out to some other state or some company who is using it. But that's going to happen soon. You're going to find that more and more big companies are going to be selling hemp shirts and hemp plants and whatever else. You know, that's going to be big time. I foresee this to be a problem because people don't understand there's a big difference between the two. And you need to, there's a lot of education that has to be going on in terms of just growing. I mean, just recently I was actually asked to give a talk on how to grow marijuana for recreational use. As a matter of fact, my next show, that's what it's going to be on, how to grow your own marijuana, because people are so confused with it. They like and this was senior citizens, okay? folks would say, okay.
That's what's fascinating about it, right? Yeah.
You know, this thing, I hurt. You know, I want to be able to eat more. I want to feel better, you know? And so I had a nice, interesting talk, and they say, well, I was using Miracle-Gro, and then I had to spray with this and spray with that. I said, you're kidding me, right? You know, the most you want to spray with your marijuana plant, maybe milk, a little coffee, maybe. But you don't want to spray anything stronger than that, because remember, you're going to be smoking the stuff.
Right. It blows my mind. Yeah.
Smoking or eating it, and you're going to get. And so it's a bit confusing. And, you know, interesting, too, close to 90% of the marijuana that's been tested at the medical place, whether it's organic or not, have pesticides on it.
I have no doubts, and isn't that sad? You know, we had a great opportunity as an industry to come out and do something the right way, but you know, it's greed, right? They needed to go to market fast, so they went to the shortcut to get.
I was telling the folks, here's an interesting thing you can think about. So you're growing pot plants, right? So you have all these leaves. Some of the things you can make with the leaves, of course, you can add it to alcohol and rub it on your body and stuff. But did you know you can make a tea and spray that back on the plants and keep other bugs and stuff from getting? You can spray it on your vegetables. You can spray it on other plants. It will keep the bugs at bay, as opposed to spray. If you have to spray something, make a tea out of stuff and spray that. You'd be surprised at what it does, because it does affect the nervous systems of the insects. It does work to some extent. And then I tell them, look, again, it goes back to the soil. What are you growing this stuff in? Right?
Right, right. A lot of them are doing, and some of them are even just kind of throwing them in a hydroponic setup and injecting them with steroids. And
that's another question too, hydroponics, because I started hydroponics, and that's really soilless. So you go, okay, no soil. So all this time I've been talking about soil is important, but how does hydroponics fit into it in terms of you have to reimitate, you know, nature down there in the liquid world, right?
Right, right. And that's a big controversial subject, right? I mean, a lot of people, and we're probably one of them, who feel that, you know, we really believe that eco-agriculture is about soil development. I wouldn't say that we discourage hydroponics either, as long as you're doing it in a way that is, you know, produces good food and good healthy food for consumers. It's hard for us to argue that that's not a viable way, especially if you're short on land. Or you don't have the access to land. Some people, that's the only way they can really grow.
And you know that right now there's a big thing going on with the hydroponic folks saying it's organic, and the organic people saying it's not, because you're not growing it in soil.
Right. Well, the USDA just decided that it was organic, that hydroponic. So that passed last year. So hydroponic is now included in the organic definition.
Right, as long as they stick to the basic organic principles of no, this chemical fertilizers. What's in my opinion, because that's why I started hydroponics. I said, well, I invented super seaweed, but it works in the soil, it works in the water, in the liquid just fine. You know, any organic material, whether it be compost, right? Compost, tea,
yeah, sure.
All these things will work fine in the hydroponics, as long as you're not, you know, bringing in the chemicals, because that's the whole idea of organics. In the first place, right, is to stay away from only use natural, man-made, because everything is a chemical, so man-made chemicals, I guess you might call it, right?
Yes, certainly, certainly. And, yeah, it's we certainly, I mean, I love the permaculture techniques involved with aquaponics and using water in a very savvy way. I know that's not necessarily growing plants in water, but I've seen people do that before where you're growing it in a different...
Oh, sure. It's not that hard to do, and it really works if you don't have the ability to do the soil or, you know, or the area. You can go up, you know, you can go up. You can have a big warehouse. You can go straight up, you know. And that's part of the future, too, because with climate change and all this stuff going on outside and outside being more and more toxic, people will have to start learning how to grow indoors more, have a greenhouse, you know, an environmental system set up inside to grow. Otherwise, you may find yourself, you know, that's another issue, because I personally don't think we have as much time as we think we do in terms
right.
of, you know, getting it together here, because the Earth is going through this change that we initiate. Normally it goes through its change. These cycles are normal, you know, but not to the degree we have done it now. And if we're not careful, we may just be becoming extinct a lot faster than we think, because we can't breathe methane. And methane is one of the biggest problems that's lurking right there in front of us. And if we don't pay attention to it, we'll be living in methane. And I don't know about you, but I can't breathe this stuff.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's and even just the subtle changes. You know, most farming is based on 30 or 40 year weather patterns. You know, that are out there that they can use and determine when to plant and when not to. And when those are disrupted even slightly, boy, does that affect everybody in an amazing way. So if we're talking about drastic changes and we're talking about several degrees temperature or 50% less rainfall in certain areas. That's going to totally change the agriculture industry in those areas.
Exactly right. That's one reason why I wrote one of my articles was some GMOs are good, some GMOs are bad. Try to explain to people that genetically engineered organisms is what we really need to key into, because, you know, we as farmers, we basically have genetically modified organisms all the time. I grow tomatoes. I pick the best tomatoes. I grow that tomatoes. I pick the best from that one. Keep doing it. I end up with the best tomatoes ever, you know, or whatever
sure.
I'm growing. But genetically engineered, in my opinion, should not, it breaks up into different classifications. But basically, my point would be that it should not be owned by a private company. It should be owned by scientists in the world, because that is the key right there to genetically modified corn. Say you don't have 10 years to develop corn that can handle this temperature at sea level. You know, everything's right, temperature's rising, trees are going higher and higher to get away from the heat. But if you can genetically engineer corn that starts growing right away, that requires less water, no fertilizer, that's what you do, right? The scientists can develop that. We can have it on the market to help people feed themselves through this change, because we're going to go through some major change too fast to be able to develop on your own, to grow something that will then we can grow in this environment. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand exactly. Instead of going and finding, you know, and when we get to the panic stage, we don't have the time to go find the corn seeds that historically grew in that climate that we can replant. We find a needle that we can poke into a plant seed and change its DNA to grow. And you know, they find those viruses that they can inject into the seed to create that DNA change.
Exactly right. And that's what we should be doing right now. We should be developing a way to ensure that we can keep up with this change, because we're going to go through some change. I mean, we're just starting now. People don't understand that it's going to get hot and then it's going to get cold.
Right.
We're
going
to go from a major a climate warming period to a cold period. Well, that cold period, by the way, is called an ice age. The last time we had an ice age was started because they were starting to come down the forest in Europe, and it was called the medieval warming period. It lasted 500 years. And that's all we did then. It was just major growth in Europe, right? And then that was followed by the Little Ice Age for another 500 years. The end of the Little Ice Age was around Washington's time. And he has a painting of him crossing the Delaware with there are icebergs in there. You know? So we're now going through, you know, our warming setup is 100 times worse than it has been in the past. So we're going to be going through heat is going to melt the glaciers. Fresh water and the salt water is going to stop the circulation. Bam, cold. And that's going to be cold for a while. And that's not only the bad case. The bad case, okay, well, what happens to all these nuclear power plants that we're going through this change? Yeah, okay, just saying.
No, I'm sitting here. I'm right there with you. It's you know, that's why we advocate for seed saving. We really try to. That's one of our education points. As we, you know, I think people who have their own seed libraries are one step ahead. You know, and it's not really preparing for the end of the world. It's just controlling your food supply. You know, and managing your own food supply.
I've been saving my seeds for years, and I'm hoping that they'll be viable when I ever finally settle down to a place to farm. I decided I can't really farm by myself, so I'm just making an announcement, and then you communal people out there. I used to live on, you're not that old, but do you ever hear of Steve Gaskin's farm in Tennessee?
I have not, but I'm making a note.
One of the early hippie communal places. There was a couple of thousand people who lived there. I think it was like a 100-acre farm. We did everything from including having our own biogas, I think it is. Okay. You're methane. Biofuel? You know, you basically have a vehicle that runs on the methane, the poop of the animals. Okay. We did that. That was fun. And we did a lot, you know, that's a lot of acreage to produce and make it work, you know. And for me, I want to move on to a farm with a group of people, like-minded people who want to, you know, do a survival thing. I'm thinking of moving to Puerto Rico in a few years after the dust settles and just settling down on a farm there somewhere. And actually, because I don't know about you. Do you garden? Do you have a garden?
What was that? I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Do you have a garden?
I do, yes. I have. In fact, I covered my spinach all winter, and I kept it growing all winter this winter. So far, so good.
Where do you live at in Colorado? Greeley, right?
In Greeley, Colorado, yeah.
I did a greenhouse in Boulder around the pool. I used the pool as a way to heat up the greenhouse.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the pool was warm. The water, I figured, well, maybe we could use that heat. So I had bananas growing in there, tomatoes, vegetables. Wow. I had raised beds, you know, around the pool. Snowing out there. Well, some things I didn't grow, like tomatoes. You know, they're dependent on light and heat, but mainly the amount of light. I had stuff growing indoors that I would try to grow year round. You know, I try to grow tomatoes, see if I can grow them year round. A lot has to do. So I created my own heating floor. I run warm water. The idea is you have these pipes that run through the house, the floor, and the roof. The roof would heat it up. It would naturally circulate all by itself and keep the place warm.
Mm.
How's that?
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, I could learn something from that. Yeah, no, I tore out an old patio and porch in my backyard and replaced it, took out about the top 4 inches of soil and spent a couple of years just, you know, filling in with good topsoil and filling in and growing garlic and spinach and a couple of things. Yeah. And I got garlic and spinach in there now, in fact. So it's
I tell people, do you, in a cold environment like that, use the house as the source. You can have the garden right up next to it. The heat from the house will protect it, you know, from the wind and stuff like that.
I use the heater vent from my heater, you know, that comes out in my backyard. So I have a little PVC pipe that hooks up there and runs that warm air closer to the plants. So
that way to go. Try to heat up the soil too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. You don't have to keep it too warm. Just warm enough, right? Yeah.
Exactly right. Just warm enough. If it's really cold, the things that don't want to grow is, hey, my feet are cold.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So listen, I want to have you on here on some kind of regular basis, so maybe you can come on, say, for a few minutes and talk about what the current issue is. Maybe, you know, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, like a news thing. We put the little – you guys have a podcast too, right?
We do. We have a Tractor Time podcast you can find on Apple on our blog site, which is EcoFarmingDaily.com.
Yeah, I got it. So where do you do it? Is that – you do it like your conferences? You tape your conferences, or do you have a regular –
We do two ways. One, we repurpose the lectures from our conferences, both historic and new. We'll use in our podcast with some introduction and some a little bit different context we'll include in there. And then we also have live guests that I'll interview and have on some of our authors and writers in our magazine and our books, and really anybody who just wants to spend 45 minutes or an hour talking about eco-agriculture.
Well, I'm a live guest.
Yeah, if you walk in my office, you probably end up getting on the podcast one way or the other.
Do I have to walk in your office?
No, you do not. It's just a threat to those who are walking to my office. Be prepared. I'll probably get you on the podcast.
Well, I'd love to be on the podcast, and I'll send you this show so you can put that on the podcast if you want to.
That would be fantastic. That would be great.
And then what I want to do is I want to be able to – so one of the things I want to do is do you have any kind of specials, any way that people can get the Acres USA? Do you have any kind of deal that you want to offer them, or how can they just go up there and get it, or what?
You know, you can find it through acresusa.com. You can find subscriptions. We offer deals. If you one-year subscription is going to be full price, but if you want a 2 or 3 year subscription, you'll save quite a bit of money on those. We also have a big book sale coming up in March called the Cabin Fever Book Sale. We know everybody's starting to go a little stir crazy at the end of the winter, so we give a chance. We do huge discounts on our books and our audio products and all sorts of different things there. So we do two big sales a year. One of those is coming up. So if you're looking for books or have a few questions out there, or just need to build your library out, it's a great time to do that.
Did you get the ebook I sent you?
I did. Yes, I'm working through it. So I apologize here. It takes me a if it helps you any, I got about we have about 9 books in the pipeline here that we're publishing right now. So my eyes get crossed pretty fast every day.
Well, I'm serious about what you could do too. Is you don't even have to be on. You can just tape it and send me the tape, and I can just play it. You know,
yeah.
So like how every month you publish your magazine. Well, I would love to get the highlights or what you think is the most important thing to get across to people. In say 5 minutes, you're gonna have to think about it. It's just,
sure.
And now the news, you know, it's just do your thing. It's just do it really well. And I think that because you and I know to get it into people's heads, you gotta talk to them over and over again.
Yep. I would love to do
you
that.
And say if you should say once, and they look at you with that blank look. You know, it's like hello, right? You have to say it enough times and enough times for them to go, oh yeah, okay, right.
No, you're exactly right. It's we always say the first 6 times they say no is they're just playing with you. It's the 7th no that really matters, right? So
yeah, exactly right. No, but otherwise, just let me know because I do the show every week, and sometimes if you want to come on, just let me know. Like the first week, first show of every month, you can come on, talk about what your newsletter, your magazine. I think that's what I would do. You got the magazine and just cover what you feel you want to cover for that issue.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'd like to take you up on that. We are constantly tracking updates in the ecology and agriculture world, and we publish a lot of them in our magazine. So
yeah,
that is something that we hopefully always have a good feel on of what's happening, what's new, and wouldn't take us a whole lot to put something together for you.
Cool, great, man. It's good to talk to you, okay?
Likewise, I really appreciate your show and what you're doing out there. So thanks for helping spread the word.
Thank you. Say hi to Ralph, right?
Fred, is that what you're...
Fred.
Yes, Fred. I talked to Fred. Fred Walters
when
constantly.
I was younger, but I haven't really talked to him a lot. Why isn't he on here? Is he that doesn't want to talk?
He's shy. Yeah, he threatens me with death if I publish his photo in the magazine even. But he is truly the mastermind behind all this stuff, honestly. He is a brilliant man who took his father's business and really sustained it over a couple tough decades in agriculture, and so he's just been unbelievable for me in teaching me how to run the business and help grow it a little bit. So I'm really lucky.
Tell him I miss his and love his dad very much, and that and he's always welcome to be on as a friend to talk about things. So if he ever feels comfortable, he can come on as an anonymous, not tell anybody. It's just hi. I'm not going to tell you my name, right? Maybe that'll work, right?
I tell you what, I would give you all the credit in the world if you could convince him to do that. So I'll work on him as well, but okay. I'll pass along the thanks and hello.
Let me know what you think of the book, okay?
I will do that, Andy. Thanks again for the time and for allowing me on your show today.
Thank you. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. I'm on here every week. Next week, I'm actually going to be doing how to grow your own marijuana, unless the engineers and the radio station says you can't do it. I may say, if you're illegal. If you're not legal, I'm not. You can't listen in. Something like that. I don't know. I'll play it by ear. If I do get something back from the powers that be that you can't do it, maybe. I mean, I can't do it, right? But if I can, I will do it. So that's what's going to be next week. The following week, we're going to have Carrie Gilliam. She's with the book called Whitewash. It's all about Roundup, the truth about Roundup, which I know you guys will already know about it. And so go up to invisiblegardener.com. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to get my newsletter. Click on contest, and you'll be an automatic winner. You get a little note back saying you have won. Here's the link. Follow the link. Click on it. Enter your name, user ID, password. A few things you got to know. Once you do that, you need to, this one book, one PDF file says, open me first. That's the reason why it says open me first. Open that up. Gives you instructions on how to get onto the podcast. How to make sure that, you know, you can get the books, the 21 books. I've also put the book up there, Don't Panic, It's Organic, for you to download right away, but it's over 21 other books that you can get, right? E-books that you can get. It's in the members page. Make sure that when you do the newsletter, they're going to send you a confirmation email to make sure it's you. If you don't click on that confirmation email, you're going to have a problem with the newsletter because you're not going to get the newsletter. So if you don't get something back right away, says welcome, thank you, whatever from my newsletter, email me and I'll help you with it right away. Just remember to mention this radio station or whatever radio station you're listening to, because I put this up all over the place. And by the way, speaking of up all over the place, this music is called Inner Gardening and is now available on iTunes. Not only on iTunes, but Spotify, Amazon, on Live, Google, all over the place. If you can't figure out, just type Invisible Gardener on iTunes. You'll see my name will pop up, or on Spotify, whatever system you're listening to. But as a member, you get these. Every time I do a song, you get it in the podcast feed. Members get all my songs, my shows. I got 4 shows. They all go through the same podcast. People sign up for different podcasts. So that's fine. You can pay for it individually. But as a member, you get them all for free on one podcast. Like you get this show on the podcast. You get Don't Panic, It's Organic. You get What's in Your Garden. You'll get the audio book. You get Inner Gardening. All on the same podcast. And you also get the Garden and the Doctor, right? Might as well. It's free. Now, if you want to pay for it, this is the $20. There's a place you can click on it. It's $20. Right away, by the way, right now it's also 50% discount. So if you were to go pay the $20, you only pay $10. And I don't mind you paying me $10, but if I were you, I would just get it for free. No problem. I enjoy doing this. Eventually, you're going to tell other people about it. Hopefully, they'll pay to join too, right? Because that's all it's all about. It's all about money. Yeah. So I'm going to play the rest of this until my Godhead tells me to stop. Thank you very much for listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. Have a good day now. This song is called Wind Rider. Oh, sorry. I'm okay. Yeah, 30 seconds and you're going to fade out. I'm fading, I'm fading.
Thank you for listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. See you next Saturday.